All right, here we are, live on air with Andy Edwards, Luke John Holmes, the Welshman and a Midwesterner. So we're gonna do a little chat about some competitive fitness training, all that kind of stuff. Quick background on Andy. Andy, I'll make you talk about yourself in a second too. But for those who don't know the formidable Dragon CrossFit, Andy also has coached Jamie Green to the CrossFit Games, and she was a rookie as an individual last year in 2017, super impressive performance, returned again in 2018 with absolutely crushed her region, did well again at the games. So if you're looking for social proof and credibility and all that kind of stuff, there it is for you. Andy, give us a quick background on yourself. You're on the level one seminar staff, you own a gym, what's the deal?
So the deal is I got introduced to CrossFit back in 2008. I failed as a professional rugby player per se. I would say I'm very small. It's a big man's sport, and I got to the level where I could basically stick out, and it was just the level below going full time and so on and so forth. So I was a little bit in purgatory for a couple of years, and then I just happened upon CrossFit when one of my other rugby mates who's in a similar sort of scenario said, "Hey, I know you're a big trainer. Come across and try this stuff out." And as they say, the rest was history. And that was the end of 2008. I was still playing a little bit of, I would say, semi-professional rugby at that time, and I quit CrossFit because I was just losing a little bit too much weight. And so I went back and just started just doing strength and conditioning, weightlifting, that kind of stuff. And then fast forward to 2009, I go out to Australia. I go traveling the world, but I end up in Australia, Sydney, Australia, playing rugby out there. And this guy called Luke Starr goes, "Oh yeah, we're opening up this CrossFit gym." And I was like, "Yeah, that CrossFit stuff, like it's all gymnastics and there's like barbells." And he's like, no, we did like 50 front squats every minute. And I'm like, all right, okay, cool. Anyway, cut a long story short, they invited me to a competition. I didn't even know it was competitive. Okay, I just thought it was some training modality. Went to a competition called the Wounded Warrior. And then as I walked in, there was these, all I could say is like juggernaut men, a guy called Chad McKay, who is a multiple games athlete. And I went on to sort of train with him back in 2009. Luke was the affiliate owner of CrossFit Active, as was Chad. And then they went and finished fourth in the CrossFit Games in 2014 or 15. Okay. So, I mean, very lucky of those individuals that reintroduced me into it. But yeah, that was my first competitive experience. And when I went out there and, you know, it was only three wads in a day. Yeah, I was just hooked from there. And then basically from there, I did my level one in New Zealand. When I came back to the UK then, roughly around about 5 months later, decided to open up an affiliate. And then I guess things had just progressed. I mean, I got in at quite a early adopter of CrossFit. Went to regionals a couple of times as an individual. Was very lucky enough to be asked to intern for CrossFit HQ. Went through the process there. I'm now, you know, very proud to put a red shirt on most weekends and just teach people the gospel and the kernel of CrossFit. In terms of the coaching element, it's just something that I picked up gradually. Down the rounds in terms of like strength and conditioning courses, other mixed modal fitness modality courses, bits and pieces like that. I guess I was just very lucky to get introduced into certain people. The people who've walked through my gym are very lucky with that. And then in terms of like the competitive experience, sent a couple of teams to regionals. In 2014, it was our sort of best competitive year. We won the European regional in the open outright, quite convincingly. And then we didn't bomb at regionals. We finished fifth, but what it was, or what we found, is that we had some serious holes within our game. And that sort of just cost us at the end. And then from there on, we've always sort of like sent either an individual or a team to regionals up until the current day, basically.
There you go. So a long storied history in the pre-Reebok days.
Yes.
A variety of different countries covered with some fitness activities, all that kind of stuff. So before we actually went live and started streaming this stuff out there, we were talking a little bit just about the idea of actually finding intensity in training and putting all the pieces together, right? So something that you mentioned that I think is really interesting is this idea that you can have people who really on paper have all these traits that seem like they should be really, really good at CrossFit in terms of their maximum strength numbers. They may have some crazy conditioning numbers. They can do huge unbroken sets of muscle ups, all this kind of stuff. But that doesn't always result in them having the performance that you would expect when they come to a CrossFit style event, right? Whether that's doing an online qualifier or showing up to some sort of, you know, weekend event that they can, you know, have all these numbers on paper, but then they don't actually put it together when they have to do thrusters, chest to bar pull-ups and double unders and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, for that athlete can be frustrating. Also as a coach can be a little bit confusing because you're like, well, what's going on here? Like this person has, you know, X, Y, Z, they can lift all this weight. Why aren't they just dominating everyone else who isn't as strong as them or, you know, can't do as many unbroken handstand pushups as them. So, you know, what were you saying about that as far as what you've seen from coaching all these folks?
Well, I just think always think it's a bit like a saying that we had in rugby, which was trains like Tarzan, plays like Jane. And I think it's almost sort of mirrors the line of, you know, everyone's fairly comfortable in regards to, you know, stuff that they do in the gym. But when it comes to the crunch, sometimes they just haven't got that element of competitiveness or going against someone in order to push them forward. Those who do have that capacity, you know, let's start with the original engine, Mikko Salo. That guy's got a sort of another level, and that's why those people are at the top, whether it's Rich Froning, whether it's Matt Frazier, you know, Tia Claire Toomey and all this. They're in an environment of where they are the elite of the elite. But if we have a look underneath that top 10, as per se, within the role of competitive fitness, I think that's when you start to find, or people who are trying to break through, is that they're following a program, they're getting great results. But then when it comes to the fact that, you know, they need to go from that fifth gear, you know, into that special sixth gear to order to make a difference, I think sometimes that intensity within following a program can be lacking, or not necessarily lacking, or it's that intensity which the coach is requiring of that athlete, they might not be able to reach that because they're not going against someone or they haven't got a training partner or something like that. That's what I've found more recently as the sport of fitness has grown, rather than a couple of years ago, because you had a lot of early adopters, alphas, people who just like the, you know, as they say, when you first started CrossFit, the first workout you ever did was probably 100 mile an hour, and we've learned that way. Whereas I think people coming in now, sometimes they're a little bit like, well, how they pace it a little bit too soon. And what I mean by that is that they're already pacing before they've gone and experienced the intensity. Do you know what I mean? I'm saying that.
Yeah, for sure. Like that, you know, learning to pace is, again, for me, I started CrossFit in 2008, and you just watch these videos and you go on main site and it's like, all right, like here's the workout. And you, these people are just sprinting out the gate, you know, max effort for 45 to 60 seconds, like completely fall off a cliff and then just slog through the remainder of, you know, a 10 minute workout. And that was just that's how you did CrossFit. You're like, yeah, just go for it and you just see what happens. So, you know, learning to back off that a little bit in pace, is potentially a really good idea for people coming from that type of area. But if you're always pacing everything, then you never actually have that understanding of like, okay, this is where my threshold is. This is how hard I can kind of ride it before I actually fall apart. So it's you're always trading off back and forth between learning to pace and then finding out what your actual capacity is and how to actually suffer through some sort of conditioning piece.
Yeah. And, you know, it comes down to the, you know, the individual. I think, you know, sometimes you'll find someone who's comfortable, and when they become uncomfortable, because let's get, you know, functional fitness, competing in fitness is hard, you know. And when I talk about the intensity element when we are on the level ones, is that why isn't everyone doing it? Well, because it's hard. you know, and sometimes people don't like to go beyond to that fact to get those results. And if you think about it in terms of the element of competitive fitness, you know, he who she who can one endure, you know, the suffering does best, and who one and the other person who is physically adapted will do the best. And so if you get the merging of the two, then, you know, you've got yourself a bit of a beast, really.
Andy, with, say, for instance, the development of CrossFit and competitive CrossFit, I'd say that now you're getting a lot more people on an individual level trying to aspire to be competitive, whereas before I think that those people involved in competitive training were doing so in groups, and they were doing so as part of a team, or, you know, or even back in the day, CrossFit classes used to be fairly competitive and in your sort of average affiliate, and it was a little bit less about just sort of getting your 60-minute sort of workout in. With people going down the individual route, training by themselves and independently, what would you say are sort of the main things that they need to do to try to instill intensity back in their training? You know, like I know you and I have spoken about this quite often, where it's like a Monday to Friday week of training, and on a Saturday it's like get in with a group. But what do you reckon?
I sort of echo that basically. My personal thoughts are in terms of people trying to develop within the sport of fitness would be, well, you've got your areas to develop. You can do that on your Monday to Friday. But what I do with a lot of my clients now is that we just have game day Saturday, which is a bit like a rugby season. You know, I might not necessarily chuck it in there every week, but I do think it's a question of like, get your mates in. Let's just, you know, throw down a little bit. Let's, you know, pump up the music, you know, Pat Sherwood thing, and then let's just have some fun. So what I'd have there is an element of maybe some, if I'm doing it more specific in regards to a session or a weekly or a monthly plan, I might put some IWT in there, some interval weight training. I might do some consecutive, you know, metabolic work, you know, fairly simple kind of stuff, you know, every 10 minutes or something like that. That's the kind of thing I will put in there to do that, in converse to, you know, S&C, you know, Monday through the Friday, you know, and I found that has worked. Sometimes I might even suggest, look, just jump into a class, because I, you know, being an affiliate owner myself, I have in the past seen the division on when you've got a competitive element in the gym versus, you know, general population, you know. And what we've done really well in Dragon now is that we get our competitive guys, you know, to train and do the daily WOD. And the reason being is that I just see it as fitness. I see it as intensity, you know, and those intensities are going to get you results. But in terms of the higher skill elements, then, you know, they need to go off and work on them individually. So let's say I've got a master's athlete, she is following one of our coaches' individualized programs, but they will still jump into the class. So she's working on stuff like muscle ups, you know, snatching, you know, and trying to develop a broader strength or absolute strength, but she will still jump into the class. And we select the classes that they go into, so that is not counterintuitive to the training that they're already doing. And so over a given period of time, we like to see consistent results, or all the markers moving up basically.
What would you say with, like, because it's it makes sense for people to be doing their own individual work when it comes to strength work or their skills or, you know, their gymnastic stuff, because I think that is very, very individual. But say for instance someone just lacks fitness and they need to develop their aerobic base, or they need to just sort of develop their comfort at that higher threshold. How would you sort of get people to do that, like individually? So, you know, an easy example is someone's trying to do some row or assault bike sprints, and they just a little bit off the mark in terms of their ability to sustain intensity. But they sort of need to do that individually as well. They can't, you know, just jump into a class, it's going to work.
I like the 30-30 principle. And I have found a lot of success in just building volume through that. So let's say, for example, we'll do a 10-minute max assault bike test. You know, we'll see what all the averages are. I try and get the average watts. And then what I will do over that 30-30 period, they start off with one set of 15. They'll do 100% wattage on the 30, and then they'll do a 50% of that wattage for 30. And so it just keeps it fairly condensed. You know, it's just up and down, up and down, up and down. And then we would build the volume. So I'd go from one set of 15. Next week, it would be two sets of 10, with like 4 minutes rest in between. The week after that, we'll go to one set of 20. And then that's what I'll do, is that I generally just try and increase volume. And what I have found is that when people then come back into, let's say, mixed modal, then that fitness is driven across, because you're asking people to go to that higher threshold. You're asking them to go to that, you know, that intensity or that suffering point, because, you know, 30-30 not only is physically demanding, but it's also psychologically demanding when you start going into the realms of 30-30 for 30 minutes. But, you know, again, it's not something which it's done randomly. It's done on a particular day, within the structure of maybe an 8 week or a 12 month period.
That's so you will you will actually prescribe them the same wattage that they held for their 10 minute test, or that the wattage that you want them to hold?
Average. So whatever the average was, I would probably get them to do that as 100% as a marker, because it's going to be there or thereabouts on a 7 minute one. So if we think of a normal sort of like VO2 max test kind of thing, and again, it's just through trial and error. I've got a guy who is Meridian Regionals competitor. He's got a 130 snatch, 165 clean and jerk. He's a big dude, suffers a little bit on terms of gymnastics, and just, you know, out and out holding that power. And what we have found is by combining the 30-30, and the thing is, it's given to them as a target, so they have to hit it. I tried doing it with a 3 minute one. That was just overcooking. With the trial and error, I've done it with different athletes, and what they've said is that this is too much, I can't hold it, this is what I can sustain. And what I found is that the 10 minute max assault bike test has been a good marker in terms of average wattage output for them to hold over that period of time. And so it's just, again, maybe for someone who is needs to develop maybe more aerobic capacity in preference to sort of power output, I might sort of change or put an additional sort of just a steady state session in there, just to sort of allow the adaptation of that higher output, or to feed in for that higher output. Again, on the individual basis, I'm just sort of seeing correlates between types of individuals, rather than, yeah, this is a given sort of like this, we've done a batch test like this, and this is what we found. It's more the correlates in different times of, or what this called an avatar, basically. And I found that's a good one. But yeah, it's kind of neglected, because I think everyone's gone a little bit, you know, fancy, you know, in terms of energy system training. And sometimes when it comes down to it, you just got to do a little bit of like old school 30-30. Very simple, try and develop volume over time. So again, just having the ability to develop that volume at that certain percentage, and then retest, see how it goes, see if there's been an improvement, and then you can just work around it from there again. Then,
in terms of thinking about how you would slot that into like a weekly training schedule, right? I mean, we just talked about the necessity of making sure that people are touching regular intensity in some sort of like more mixed modal types of situations. And, you know, we're also talking about adding in this relatively uncomfortable assault bike work. So how often are you having people touch on that type of, you know, discomfort? Is that something that they do a few times a week? Is that something they do every day? What are your thoughts there?
Once, in terms of that sort of like 30-30 environment, because they can do it on their own, and then maybe another time sort of in a more mixed modal environment at the end of the week. So the way I've always structured my week, but it has changed depending on the athlete. Just when I first started working with Luke back in the day, I never sort of felt that the three on one off worked through a competitive week. I think it's perfect for general population, because it just gives them the best ability to, you know, maximize recovery and maximize intensity. But what I found is, in a more structured environment, that Monday, Tuesday, you've had a day off on a Sunday, you come in Monday, all guns blazing. So you might say, you know, do max efforts, lifting, strength numbers, you know, if you're feeling pretty jazzed up. Then on the Tuesday session, I would try and build the intensity maybe in the morning, okay, through that 30-30, and then in the PM, they would just do upper body volume, whether that's gymnastics, whether that's sort of like hypertrophy work or remedial work. Then on the Wednesday session, it would be like a recovery day, so it would just be steady state work and bits and pieces like that. And what I have found is that that's allowed to put in more volume throughout the week, but also allows to blend the high low kind of methodology. So again, it's up to that individual whether they want to do any restorative work on the Wednesday. I always recommend it. And then likewise, when it comes to the end of the week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, most competitions are going to be 2 or 3 days long now anyway. So like the Thursday one would probably be a little bit of active recovery, restorative work. You can come in, you can give it a good old shot. Friday's the end of the week, so I generally try and have a little bit of a lower day, but it still maybe be depending on the person's background. They may do a double session, not necessarily with intensity, but with something there in the morning, more energy system work. But then on the Saturday, I'd ask them in a... I guess a kind of fatigue state because it's the third day to perform at that high intensity. And there's just been certain correlates or when I've had conversations with people which sort of allow more anecdotal evidence as than experiential evidence in terms of how that works. So I've been very fortunate to spend a bit of time with James Hobart, you know, through the level one working with him and so on and so forth. And you know, what's the question that everyone always asks him is like, oh well, what's it like training with Rich Froning? And one of the big things that he said there was like they would never be in a fresh state when they'd be doing the workout, so they'd always be in under some part of fatigue. And what he believed is why they were successful or why Rich was successful as an athlete is that throughout the weekend of a competition they were already prepared because they'd had experience of working out in a fatigue state, basically, you know. And so that's how that sort of all fits around. Again, would I program in terms of those intensity bits 24/7, 365? No, you know, because, or, you know, the CrossFit season rather than the functional fitness season does have a distinct, you know, beginning, middle, end, or pre-season, off-season, season, etc. And, you know, with the change in the competitive element now, that has changed quite significantly. But, you know, circa before 2018, you had distinct periods of time. And I think that's where, you know, programming, you know, periodization and bits and pieces started to come in, you know, quite significantly. You can still do it now, but you need your athletes to basically peak at particular times, and so it needs to have an element of choice of what's going to be coming in with there. Because ultimately, if you don't fix your weak areas, okay, you know, you're never going to make an improvement. But if that individual's weak area is intensity, you're probably going to have to do a lot more of it in comparison to someone who's not necessarily a weakness in intensity. Like, I'm just trying to think, you know, in terms of, you can't get someone really, really, really strong, absolute strength, and work on intensity at the same time. But if you want to get them or just drip feed it in a little bit, maybe, you know, a session once a week maximally, or a session every 2 weeks maximally. You've just got to see how that affects their other parts of training based on that individual.
Yeah, so I think that the something you mentioned there triggered in me a thought of a conversation I had with a client recently where we were talking about actually pushing during workouts, right? And you know, we talk about listening to your body and not trying to do stuff that doesn't make sense and understanding your own pace and all that kind of stuff. And that's probably a valuable skill for an athlete to have, is the ability to sort of know, okay, this is a day that I can really go for it. This is a day that I'm kind of fatigued. This is a day where I'm fatigued, and that's fine. That's kind of the point, is for me to be able to sort of, you know, not necessarily just like layer on more stuff on top of, more stuff that I've already done and just kind of grind myself into the ground. But there is a goal here for me to be able to keep moving while I'm not necessarily feeling 100%. And something that she said that I found really interesting is that she was kind of cycling through all these thoughts in her head the entire time that she's actually doing the prescription, right? The workout or the training session, is that she's kind of like, oh, am I pushing too hard? Am I pushing too little? You know, am I already fatigued? Is this a day that it's worth it to push? Should I kind of back off? And what I found really interesting about that was that, you know, we'd had all these discussions about learning about yourself and how you should feel. And then it turned into this kind of like constant self-talk during the workout about whether or not she should be trying or not, which I was like, whoa, holy cow, that's just really not what the point of this is at all. And what we ended up talking about was, you know, you should always like kind of have that ability in a training session to kind of just, you know, pull the parachute and just kind of be like, okay, hold on. Like we're not getting good work done today. Like that's always an option. But the discussion I had with her had to do with making the decision before she actually started her piece, right? If it's like a 10-minute AMRAP or something, it's like, before you start this, you're going to decide essentially how hard this should be for you. And then your goal throughout that is to hold that level of effort the entire time, not to constantly be deciding whether or not this is the time to push or not. So, you know, I'm curious how you communicate the goal or the desired intensity to athletes and how you actually, I guess, facilitate them achieving that goal rather than kind of like overpacing, underpacing, having a bunch of negative self-talk because they don't feel as good as they should. What are your thoughts on that?
It's kind of an interesting one. I mean, a lot of the athletes I've worked with, through the results of the program, I can tell whether it's kind of working or it's not working in terms of the response which you're talking about. So for example, with Jamie, I'll put something on here. For this one, I want for you just to hold back a little bit. And I guess I'm just lucky with some of the athletes that I've got that they know what is optimal for them. Let's say someone's gone out a little bit too hard. It was like, oh man, I hit a brick wall, this and that. And then I'd have a conversation with them in regards to, well, where did you find it? You hit the brick wall. Oh, it was with my, you know, like the snatches or the bending or something like that. I'm like, okay, well, let's refer it back. Talk to me how you broke things down. And sometimes in terms of that education point, which Luke has gone down to, it comes down to rep schemes. So sometimes I might say, okay, let's say we've got, 25 toes to bar. I might say, I want you to do this in a descending ladder. I'll try this one out. And then try and stick to that as best as you can. So it's more like a guidance piece in terms of descending sets allows them to maintain intensity to a certain point, but also gives them enough break. And I would give guidelines in terms of that, of what I'm after. So, you know, things that we all know, or we've got metrics for, is like wall balls. If I want them to do 25 wall balls unbroken, so let's say I gave someone the other day 5 rounds, 3 minutes on, 1 minute off. It was a 250 row, 25 wall balls, and in the remaining time, an AMRAP of muscle ups. So I know that 250 and that 25 is going to be done at, you know, an 80% pace. I'll just say, look, I want it to be done. I want you to row at 145 for that 250, let's say. Then I want you to do the wall balls unbroken. And then whatever the remaining time is, you go maximal effort on the muscle ups. Now, the muscle ups are tending to be a natural breakdown. So they might just say, let's say the athlete comes off there and does 15. Okay, maybe 15 unbroken. I know then there's going to be a natural attrition there. And again, you'll sort of start to see that. But I will say, I want you to maintain these paces throughout that time. And again, that's where the element of individual programming comes down to, is that I can give people that kind of touch because I know them well. Whether as if it's a blog prescribed, and you couldn't necessarily do it. You could prescribe, you know, let's say that 145 on that row, and you know, or you say 145 for a dude, and you know, 150, 155 for a female, just based on that. And you just don't know how that's going to affect that individual. You know, whether they're going to be, they're trying to hold that as best as they can. They get off, they get onto the 25 wall balls, and they're just done, and they're so fatigued that they can't do a big set of muscle ups and stuff like that. So that's generally how I've done it with individuals. They will feed back to me if they've hit a wall, if they feel it's not right. But generally, it's on the, I don't want to say it's on the money because nothing's perfect, but we're there or thereabouts.
Yeah, for sure. I think that the, like you mentioned, that idea of trying to give people the appropriate prescription is always very challenging as far as, you know, giving them specific numbers to hit. But that if you know the individual well enough, then you are actually able to say, listen, I know what a 145 is going to feel like for you. And this is exactly what I want to happen.
Yeah, exactly. You know, even to the thing is that, like, I am programming in strategy or pacing for them. And again, it just comes down to, you know, a bit of experience, and you know, because what I found is, you know, but if you ever look at sort of some programs which are out there and stuff, I think sometimes there is only one pace, and obviously the attrition from those programs, whether it be through injury, burnout, or just people just get sort of like, I can't fit all this in an hour, you know, starts to sort of be quite glaringly obvious. And so what I want to do is that, let's say we've got an individual who can maximize 90 minutes a day. I want to make sure that they're warm, because that getting them warm allows me to maximize the intensity at which I want. We don't have to try and warm up through, you know, various sets and stuff like that. But it's one of those things, if they don't hit it. So let's say, for example, you know, and I'm quite honest about this. Sometimes, because Jamie is top 10 elite of the sport, sometimes I either undercook it or I overcook it, you know, and she will just say, I was just too hard to hold, so I held this. And again, that's just me learning from someone who's the best in the game in regards to what is manageable and what is not manageable, you know. And sometimes I generally, with someone at that level, let's say, for example, a 155 touch and go ground to overhead, I'll put it in there, and she's like, yeah, done that. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, yeah, it's a learning piece. Whereas before, you know, you've got to take that with that individual, because, like, you know, 155 for her, maybe a percentage is per se, but I don't want to prescribe percentages because they never come up in a fitness competition. It's just, you know, it's always a definitive, this is the weight. You just understand what that best protocol is for that individual. So I've got, like, say, a girl here who's, you know, one of the best in the UK. It's always a good gauge to see how the distance between her and Jamie, let's say. So, like, you know, whereas Jamie can do a 155 ground to overhead, you know, for X amount of reps, I'll give the same to the individual that trains out of Dragon, and there's a distinct difference. So, like, she's like, oh yeah, there's no way I was doing that, or it would be like, I could do it consistently, but it had to be drop and go. And you know, so you're just learning from experience, because at the end of the day, you know, that's the sport of fitness, is that it's based on, you know, in individuals. And I think those who don't necessarily know their themselves or know their body just need a little bit of guiding. This is what we're looking for. And then for the coach, it's a learning point. So for that individual, if I wanted the individual that's at the gym here, if I wanted them to do touch and go, I might pull that back to 135. So you see what I mean? It's just like, you can still give them the same workout, but then in dose response, it would be like, Jamie's going to have 155 and then Sammy's going to have 135. And that's the difference, basically.
Like, with you're sort of obviously talking about the sort of coaching being like a two-way communication channel, which is obviously, it's just as much a learning process for the coach as it is the athlete. And, you know, you said that a lot of your higher end athletes have got a good intuition about things, where to the point, like, if you write something up in terms of a prescription and they're like, actually, this was too easy, or this was too hard, and then what they'll do is they'll sort of self-organize to the point where they're finding that. But what would you say, like, if someone is starting to move into more competitive type training, they don't necessarily have that yet, but like, what would you say is a good way of developing that, either from, you know, both from like the athlete themselves, but then also for a coach, like how can they encourage that type of intuition to be developed?
Well, I mean, I'd go as easy as simple as how have we done it? You know, I've been very fortunate for training since I was 13, or, you know, do gym training since I was 13, and it's gone through the mill, or as people say, in the trenches. And I think sometimes, when you start working with someone, like I work with an individual at the moment, who's pretty raw, and it's just remembering where you want to get them to. So communicating that would be like, this is what I want for you to do, and then just noting the outcome, whether it's right or whether it's wrong, and then look to amend or improve on that the next time that you write a session or the outcome of what you want from a particular workout. Does that make sense? It's just like, in terms of the individual basis, you've got to do that. If you were to do it on a blog type environment or a class, like a competitor's program type environment, I think sometimes it's just, this is the outcome that you want. And then that would be a training piece versus this is the weight I need to load. And then some people can do it easy, and then just some people just get bogged down. But, you know, yeah, that's what it comes down to. It's like, what I always do is like, if I was to ask you, you know, both you guys, how long does a wall ball take?
Good two seconds there.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, we know from experience how, you know, even to the point where we've gone out and we've timed it. So we know on average how long that takes. Some people just don't know. So, you know, when you were prescribing something like, look, I want you to do 50 wall balls, when we're putting maybe on in terms of a time perimeter, then we know the average time that's going to take. And sometimes it's just, that's just quantifying it in regards to them as a client or them as an athlete, getting ourselves to experience it, you know, and those kind of things is that, you know, even on the basic level, you know, the introduction level, the level one, what we, or when I do the program and lecture, I'm like, you have to experience this for yourself, you know, and I think that's sometimes important for us as coaches, and both as the athletes in regards to their coaches need to understand. So, you know, if we don't know what Fran feels like, and then we're asking people to do 3 Frans in a row, it's a bit like, are we just trying to sort of make stuff up, or we just like, I'm just like, you know, that's one of the things that I see sometimes. I'm just like, has that person done that? You know, it's just like, wow, not too sure. I'm not saying like you have to do every session. Like sometimes, like if I'm writing something for some of the top guys, it's like, this is where I want you to be at, or but I don't know. If it's too heavy, do this load. If it's too light, do that. You know what I mean? So you just give some options sometimes. And again, you know, the education piece, it comes down to, like you probably, guys have probably seen it, it's like percentages. Some people will come into the gym and say you've prescribed 80%. They will try and do that, and they won't leave the gym until they've do that. But you just don't know what day they've had, you know, in terms of perhaps it is a 75% intensity kind of day. So they need to sort of recognize that. It's like, you know, whether it's a squat program or bits and pieces. Well, you know, like let's talk about the Russian squat cycle. You know, it's a 6-week program. You're going to do 80% every day you come in. You're going to do this. But that squat cycle is written for professional athletes who were on copious amounts of anabolic steroids and had all the recovery procedures in there. Yes, there's elements that it is successful in terms of for, you know, regular people. Having gone through that process myself in terms of doing the cycle, I've had success from it. But you've got to understand that sometimes it's not, you're going to have to pull back a little bit, because I'd rather people do the work than just sort of come out deflated, haven't been able to do that. And it's just like, hey, don't worry. Some days you're up, some days you're down. I mean, do you guys, like, how do you address this with your clients?
I mean, I get people to do like a daily score where I encourage people to assess themselves before they start the session, or just having a look at things like sleep, their nutrition through the day, how they're feeling. It usually just gives people, it gives them the opportunity to confront, you know, their current situation, and then they go into their session. But then at the same time, I'll be a little bit more, it won't be specific percentages that I'll be putting up. So it will be building up to, you know, something that's heavy, something that's tough, and using that type of language to make sure that people are getting the right sort of prescription. But then there's sometimes can be a little bit more handholding where I'm like, okay, this pace is, you are able to understand someone who is talking to you, but you are not able to talk back to them. And it's like trying to give them,
it's more like an RPE kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
That, that comes with experience as well. So like this is why I don't use an RPE personally, is that your RPE is very different to my RPE, you know? So in terms of like my interpretation of an 8 might be very different to your interpretation of an 8. But I guess it's a guideline in terms of like trying to educate people. I think all of these things come down to experience, really, you know?
Yeah, I always think about trying to maximize the ability of the client to learn during the session, right? And so sometimes for me, that means giving them more of an RPE type of situation where it's like, hey, I want this to be at this percentage effort. I want this to be, moderately challenging, whatever, so that they can have a little bit of leeway to fiddle with stuff and see where they actually end up sitting. And then other times it is giving them, all right, row at a 142 pace and see what happens. You know, I want the assault bike at 68 RPM for this amount of time, and then go right into an unbroken set, see what happens.
I guess I base a lot of my stuff on my experience. So when I was 2014, I was 13th in Europe, and that's the year that we went team. I did a lot of rowing, so it was when it was like it was becoming fancy to do aerobic work and stuff like that. So I did a lot of rowing, and what I would do, so let's say my coach at the time, Ollie Mansbridge, posted, I want for you to do 30-30, that's the best one. I want you to do 500s at 80% pace. What I would do, this is the only way I've ever found out what works for me, I'd do a max 500, I'd then probably wait 15 minutes, take 80% of that pace, and then I'd look to hold that for the number of given sets, with the number of set of rest. For me, I felt that works. So like, you know, it may not be, I'm not going for a PB on the max effort, but I just want it to hurt, you know? And that's where I've sort of like gauged it sometimes in terms of setting those paces, because if you do the testing protocols and you get your bank of data at the start, what you'll find is that you've got some numbers which to work on. Okay, and then you can go for it from there.
Yeah, I wanted to circle back to something you mentioned earlier, Andy, which I think is really interesting, is the idea of programming for an athlete like Jamie, who, like you mentioned, is literally one of the best in the world at this sport. And, you know, I mean, I've coached some people who are pretty good, but none who are anywhere near that level. And what I'll do is, you know, look at Jamie Green's scores and be like, all right, well, this is what's possible. So we know that you're pretty good and you're not this good. So let's see if we can get you closer to what the athletes at the top are doing. So in that sense, like you mentioned, I think you have a local athlete in that situation where there's a pretty obvious target where it's like, well, this is what Jamie can do and you're here and we're going to try to close that gap. But for someone like Jamie, where there isn't necessarily, you know, this aspirational athlete to shoot for, I mean, obviously you can try to figure out what Tia is doing, but it's not the same thing where, you know, there's a sort of benchmark out there that you're trying to just inch closer toward. How do you actually approach that in terms of figuring out, okay, this is definitely the spot that needs work, this is what we think is possible for you, all that kind of stuff?
It just comes down to the testing. So for example, I always ask the athlete what level they want to compete at, because it needs to be manageable, it needs to be enjoyable, and I think it's our responsibility as coaches, programmers, whatever to do, is to allow the athlete to enjoy the journey. And that's the one thing, you know, it's like some people, you just have to tell people. Let's say I had someone come in and say, hey, back in the day, I want to go for regionals. I'm like, cool. It's the first time we're working together. What I want for you to do, I want you to do max out your snatch, max out your clean and jerk. And you're on the person, let's say it's a male individual, they go 80 and 110. I'm like going, okay, regionals. I'm like, we've got a lot of strength work to do. You know, and again, it comes from more anecdotal evidence, like Wee George. All right, so you hear through the grapevine, the guy never walked into the gym, picked up the bar and snatched 100 kilos. I'm like, you know, for that person to train to go from 80 to 100, and bear in mind you've watched them, yeah? You know, it's almost like the level of where the sport's at now compared to where it was. People need to be just like those, oh, I don't think freaks of nature, but there's always going to be a path. So as long as that individual wants to work towards being at that level, and that's what their goal, their ambition is, and they feel as if they're progressing towards that level, i.e. we're taking that 80 kilo snatch up to 100, you know, maybe up to pushing up to 110, and all the other markers that we see fit for the regional level or that level, then that's the most that we can do. How that person progresses will give you a coach of an indication of whether they're going to do it, but they got to understand that they're working towards that level. And what I mean by that is that, you know, we've all worked with athletes or individuals who think that all they need to do is to train hard, eat well, sleep well, and then they're going to get to that level. And it's not going to be the case, because it, you know, you have to have a gift genetically to get there. You might unlock the pieces and hard work pays off. I get it. But, you know, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. So all of a sudden, when you get these talented individuals working hard, the bar is just going up and up and up and up. And I think now as the sport becomes more professional, that bar is just going all the way up. So as long as we're addressing that the people are getting better and their markers are improving as well as the bar moving up, then I think both as a coach and an athlete that we should be happy in the results. Because, like, you know, it's like you're not going to find someone jump 30 kilos in the matter of 3 months if they are gifted athlete. I think I'm making sense. I don't know, I kind of rattle on a little bit. Can you see where I'm coming at in regards to that? It's just like, you know, if I use Jamie as an example, last season, and she'll say that, I mean, she came back from quite a significantly bad injury, a dislocated shoulder. Okay, from a maximal effort of overhead squats after performing push presses and burpees within a qualifier. And so I think in terms of her physical, we got her up to a physical capacity at the games last year, but mentally her confidence, you know, wasn't as good as it was the year before. And I think just time and experience of doing more training puts that confidence level up. And then when you get those two together, then you're going to get the desired result and outcome. You know, when you're working with someone who is physically gifted, and it comes into that intensity point, which we touched on at the beginning, that person's confident in their ability to get into that zone of hurt, suffering, and then just stay there, then, you know, the results are going to be better. But it's an element of learning. You know, we've got to understand what that person's like. I mean, you know, I waffle quite a bit, but like it, for me, everything's on an individual basis and on an experiential basis. And then when someone comes and bucks the trend, then I look to why they buck the trend, if you know what I mean. And I think we can all categorize the athletes that we work with into sort of, I don't want to call it avatars because they're different, but like into categories of athletes. So whether you've got someone who is going to, let's say, be able to qualify for a sanctional event versus someone who's going to go and finish top five in a sanctional event. You know, do I feel like everyone who does competitive fitness is going to qualify for a sanctional event? No, because, you know, I've got enough experience, and, you know, I'm long enough in the tooth to know that there are going to be people that and take up this sport and qualify within the space of 6 months, i.e. Matt Frazier, there's also going to be people who are going to have to dedicate their life for 2 years in order just to qualify for a sanctioned event. And it's just trying to weigh it up and making sure that both those individuals are catered for in their experience and are moving forward. And I think that's a tough task for us sometimes, or when asking, well, you've got this person here and you've got this person there, can we sort of have some gauge, or like if this person's at this level, how do we get this person up there? As long as we get them moving up at the same rate and the same time, you can use the data from both sections to basically broaden your experience as a coach, i.e. you know, you have different markers at different levels. Certain gyms have like what they call a novice and intermediate and advanced workout. So whether, if you take a prime example would be Fran, you can do it in two ways. You could say, well, you're at your elite level if you do it in 2.5 minutes and below, you know, you're intermediate if you can do it 5 minutes and below. But then what happens is then when we add loads, let's say we do a heavy Fran, then you're probably going to see that 2.5 minute individual still be at around about a 3 minute, but that 5 minute individual just drop off completely. And so like, you just want to start banking all that knowledge, banking all that data, so that you can then use that to help someone who's maybe new, and then you can gauge what level you put that person into, basically.
Yeah. Go ahead, Luke. Sorry.
Yeah. So, like, I think it is important if someone is looking to objectively make some headway in the sport and go to, you know, what is now sanctionals, then people have to look at trends, people have to look at data, and people have to be, you know, completely upfront with that. But as well as that, do you think I notice now that there's a lot more people coming into the sport, and they're coming in and they're trying to get to that straight away, and they're sort of they might have some semi-professional background in sport, and then they're jumping straight to that point and they're like, right, okay, cool, I want to be here. And you know, they might have some experience going through some forms of training that are involved in CrossFit, so they've got some ground level ability there. But do you think it's like it's going to be beneficial for them to go through that sort of like class experience where they're like literally just killing themselves every day type thing, and they're getting a little bit more competitive with it, and they're actually enjoying the process, and they're getting the buzz from it, as opposed to, because I see people burning out quite quickly, or some people, you know, making these like grandiose like claims that they're gonna, that, you know, they're on the journey to, or the road to, or whatever it is, where it's like actually like the focus needs to be on you enjoying this process.
Yeah.
And, you know, and trying to get to that.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, because at some point you are not going to be a professional athlete. And the thing is, if you're slogging yourself in the gym, let's say, you know, you come in, you're a semi-professional athlete, you've got a good athletic background, you still need to do work to get to a certain area, but you have to enjoy it. And I guess the more you enjoy training, you know, functional fitness athletes, CrossFit athletes just love training. The better you're going to get, the better work you're going to get from it. I personally believe if you come in at the bottom level, and you can sort of see that all the way through back to the best people in the sport. You know, Matt Frazier just turned up to, CrossFit Vermont. Is that right? I can't remember, something like that. He just did his own thing. Then he jumped into a couple of classes. Likewise, same as Rich Froning. You know, Jamie's mum bought her a 6-week training pack to go and do CrossFit Dunedin. You know, she came from a very, very athletic background, but it was only after doing regular classes, doing bits and pieces, that they're like, do you know what? I quite like this. I want to do this a little bit more. And then from there, you can then ask more of an athlete, and they'll enjoy the process. Because as soon as I think the enjoyment's taken out of it and it begins a grind, because there's not enough, previously there's not enough competitions to go into at that level, i.e. you've got a season, then the reward factor is kind of limited, i.e. you're asking people to partake in all this training. It's almost like an Olympic cycle. Okay, so if you think about, you've got these people who train for 4 years, and then they come to the Olympic qualifying in totals, and then they don't get it. It's a bit like, they've got to enjoy that process to get there. Otherwise, they think their world's going to cave in and collapse and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's why just doing when people get into the sport or get into the the method of training, just doing a couple of classes is paramount, because one, you make friends. And training with your friends is always, you know, pretty cool. But also within a gym environment, I think it garners support, you know, and being an affiliate owner, because, you know, sometimes when people talk about individual programming and bits and pieces, we may not all be affiliate owners. We may not understand the stresses that can cause within a good, vibrant community. But by doing a couple of classes, you get the community on side, and guess what, that power of people supporting you pushes you on and increases the enjoyment through training. So the guys out of YAS, all of the elite level athletes from YAS, they're all coaches, they all go to socials, they you know, constantly mixing in with, you know, people who've got full-time jobs. They might even ask people if they've got, do you want to come in and just train. We're very lucky that we've got a guy here who lived out in Abu Dhabi. He's very good friends with Jamie and Elliot, and he used to just jump in the sessions with them. And even that, at that same level, let's per se, it's still creating that element of enjoyment. Yes, you know, they it still gives them an element of push. So for example, let's say if I jump in now with one of the top end people here, I'm trying to aspire to get as good as them, or maybe push. But then as I'm trying to get push a little bit harder, they can just start to push themselves a little bit hard. You see what I mean? So it's a whole symbiotic effect by just starting off in a regular group environment. Now, there are those who can come in and just dominate, and it may not necessarily be for them, but I think they are few and far between, you know, and having had experience of going out to the, you know, the CrossFit Games with Jamie and just sort of seeing behind the scenes, people come with a support party. And, you know, even if you have a look at CrossFit Mayhem, their marketing isn't just Rich Froning. Their marketing is, look, you know, look at the community we've got here. We got people sort of, training and joining stuff. They're doing the same work as the guys, but the other guys might be doing a bit more. And I just think that everything all coexists. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Follow-up question on that. Since you know, we talked about some of the competitors at your gym locally, as well as the fact that you coach people remotely, and you have, like you mentioned, just an affiliate, right? Just people who come in and train, who want to look at people, et cetera. How do you actually think about creating that culture locally at Dragon CrossFit, right? I mean, you know, I've run a gym as well that has had competitors. You know, some people say, oh, competitors ruin your gym, which I don't necessarily think is the case, but we definitely had challenges with it, right? It is difficult to have people who have different goals, who have to do some individualized stuff away from the classes. You know, once the gym gets large enough that inevitably cliques start to form, sometimes that can be neutral, sometimes that can be bad. And, you know, it's just a lot to actually manage. So how do you think about creating a culture at Dragon that, you know, keeps all of those people involved and engaged in the broader community, and then also, you know, facilitates just a good training culture of people wanting to get better, pushing when appropriate, asking questions, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. Drinking. No, I'm not joking.
Simple as that. See, that's my problem. I don't drink.
Christmas parties.
We've learned both the hard way and the easy way. So believe it or not, and I don't know if this is endemic of why on the bigger team platforms we've done well as a gym, but like a lot of the better athletes in our gym started off in the class environment when we first opened up, and they're still the top end kind of athletes as well. Again, it's luck in terms of what came through the door. When we then went a little bit more professional in terms of taking training a little bit more seriously, and bits and pieces, there was a little bit of divide. And I think that was just more to do with, like, they saw people doing extra work. They those that it required extra room, it might interrupt the class, and you know, it's just come through experience, you know. And I think these things are over the years have become less of an issue because people have learned from that experience. So, you know, in terms of, for example, no one's bigger than the gym here, and I've in terms of a community, in terms of that element, I've always put that down, you know, from day one. And I think it's just been lucky because when we opened up, I trained with the group, and because because there was only five people doing CrossFit at the time then anyway, but because I've been at that sort of regional level, it's a bit like, well, look, no one's bigger than the gym as per se, you know. It's if I'm leading by example, jumping into a couple of classes, not training or disrupting the other class, you know, and when it's going on, I think that's established us to have a bit of a harmonious community. And, you know, there has to be a leader as per se. I don't know from experience of not being the affiliate owner, so I don't know how maybe other gyms have managed that. But it's always been like, I feel that someone's getting a little bit too big for their boots, I'm not afraid to cut someone down and just say, look, this is what I think you need to do. And again, it's just leading from the front in terms of that experience. How it happens in other gyms, I couldn't tell you. So I know, like, you know, Luke, because obviously you've been a head coach, you've been a competitive athlete. I mean, how does that differ? Because Todd, I'm assuming it was the same with you. You've competed at a high level, so you've had the ability to sort of say, this is how it is, or this is what we've experienced, and this is what I would like for a harmonious community.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like you mentioned, you know, you learn from mistakes and from positives. Yeah. And you know, we definitely have had some situations where it's like, whoa, okay, like that can't happen again, right? And I think that, at least for me, some of it just caught me by surprise, where I didn't anticipate that people, you know, would potentially behave badly, that they would start competing with each other for spots on a theoretical regionals team that hadn't even mm-hmm. qualified, you know, 9 months out from the open. Like, mm-hmm. whoa, what are you guys doing? Like, this is crazy. Right. So, you know, you see that stuff. And then once it happens, at least for me, now I kind of know what the red flags are and what to look for. Mm-hmm. And honestly, just have a somewhat darker view of human nature, where it's like, wow, people really will do like shady stuff to each other and cut each other down and not really be in it for like the big picture or the long haul. So now just having that awareness, it's much easier, like you said, to have that conversation way earlier when it's something minor, or you start to see something potentially going in a direction, just be like, yo, that doesn't fly here. Whereas before, you know, if you're not even aware that that's something that could happen, and then it does happen, you're like, whoa, whoops, okay, whoops.
I think it's a difficult one, because I think it's essentially an individual sport, people train as teams and groups, but then you also have like quite a lot of people who don't necessarily have like a competitive sport background, like jumping into this and then sort of picking it up competitively. And I think for me, I think I've sort of used elements from my sort of team sport background growing up, and I think that I've always encouraged people who are better athletes in the gym, or, you know, is like leading by example and just being being an ambassador for the gym in every sense, in the sense of you train really hard, you're switched on with it, but you also have fun with it. You're not, you know, sort of just doing your own thing in the corner and not talking to anyone. And I think it's a tough one, because you've obviously got lots of different personality types sort of thrown in. It's also, you know, you've got people who are paying a membership potentially, who are then representing the gym at this other level. So it gets a little bit convoluted as well. But I think that, yeah, just trying to sort of, like back from like sort of rugby days, it's like, okay, someone sort of new comes in, you take care of them. And then, you know, you try to make sure that it's as cohesive as an atmosphere as possible. And that sort of trickles down into, you know, into the class and into the main gym culture.
I guess someone needs, you have at some point, and I think this is the one of the big reasons why CrossFit, I can't talk for CrossFit, but you know, if you think about what has happened in the last 12 months in terms of, right, we've got sanctioned events, or like CrossFit's given an event a thumbs up, it's kind of moves it away from CrossFit being a sport. Can you see what I mean? Because it's like functional fitness is the sport, or fitness racing, whatever they're going to call it, and it's given a thumbs up by CrossFit, but it's just allowed CrossFit to say, look, we're just a training methodology, and guess what? You can actually compete in it. And I think people need to make that decision from actually just the experience of going to a CrossFit gym, seeing if they like it, and then they're like, do you know what? I kind of want to try and see how good I can get. But I think that has to happen organically. I've got people in the gym. I've got, you know, I've had female clients come into the gym who I've been absolutely blown away when they first start. And I'm like, do you fancy competing? They're like, nah, I'm not even interested. You know what I mean? So that person's got to want to have that natural desire. Like I had this one ex-gymnast come in, kipping pull-ups without trying, 80 kilo ground to overhead. And I'm just like, you know, I'm like, you know, it's almost like a kid in a sweet shop. I'm like, oh, awesome, we're going to go all the way. And do you want to do it? Nah, not interested. You know, so, you know, and stuff like that. So CrossFit Active, the lady's name. Oh, she went to the CrossFit Games, Alethea Boone. She never thought she was ready to leave the fundamentals unless the coach said. So she was like, oh, I want to stay in the fundamentals. And the coach basically had to go, I think you're okay to do the classes now. She's like, are you sure? And it's always been like that. You know, so you get all, you know, this is the individual differences. We've all had the individual who thinks that, why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? Oh, I want to do more of this. You know, and that's generally more so of the individual you find. What we're touching on now is such a big remit, because, you know, for me, my affiliate is first and foremost the competitive element. It was nice to do, and you know, it's still great. I really want to keep on top of the ball in terms of working with, you know, some of the best athletes in the sport. But I also, you know, get massive joy out of, you know, people losing 100 pounds and, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm doing it using the method. But the things, you know, like I've got this guy who has lost 125 pounds. And he's like, when can I start bodybuilding? And I'm like, dude, you don't need to yet. Because I'm like, you've still got, you know, 50 pounds to lose, you know, so it's even if we're not talking about the competitive element or someone who wants to compete, you've still got to manage that individual who instinctively everyone wants more. And I think if you can just keep it as simple as possible, so in terms of this is what you need and I want you to ask for more, then we can give you more. And I think sometimes with the top end athletes, it can be the same thing, because they're going to ask for more. You can give them more, and then you can see the results, and then you're like, all right, cool. Where that happens within the gym, I think if it organically grows, the population of the gym understand that that person is good, let's per se, and you know they're happy for that to go ahead. You know, it's like the guy that's lost 125 pounds. Everyone recognizes that he's lost 125 pounds through doing the classes, through having fun. And then if he's in the corner doing biceps and triceps because he wants to get his arms bigger, I think people are like, oh, good on it. You know, so it doesn't matter what sort of level that you're up to. I guess it just comes down to the, you know, a management of people. But in terms of instilling culture, I think that culture, which we've tried to do here, is that everyone just gives their best. It doesn't matter what the outcome is. We just want people to turn up, have fun, and, you know, do the best within their class. And whether that means that person is going to have to go in the corner for a little bit because of what their goals are, I think if there's a mutual respect of what that person's goals are across the board, then that I think that works. But if you think about in terms of gym populations, once you start getting to 300-400 people, it's a bit like, well, it's a lot of people to manage then, you know. So yeah, it's yeah, it's a very interesting time, I feel, for affiliates and functional fitness, specifically if you do have a competitive element, because it's management, it's people management in the end.
Yeah, it's a lot of the same stuff of just figuring out how to get people to, you know, pursue their own goals without feeling threatened by other people, and giving them pretty clear guidelines in terms of what they can and can't do. And that, you know, you expect that there's going to be some sort of problems that pop up, and just have some sort of preemptive way of dealing with them before they become actual issues, rather than just like, you know, this person said something I didn't like. You're like, well, it's life. You're fine.
Yeah. That's the thing, you know, sometimes, you know, we're talking about coaching the elite, you know, and trying how to guide them in the right way. You know, Luke, you've spoken about, you know, that team ethos, which you like to bring. Sometimes we've got people that have never been in a sport or a competitive or even a gym, a group training environment. And sometimes, you know, we have to guide people into the way or shape them into like how we want them to be within that kind of environment, you know. And for a time, I had the whole all black saying up on the wall, no dickheads. And I put that up at a time when I felt that there was just one or two people, just why they're not, no, this is, just being dickheads, basically. And so it's just there as a reminder, you know. This is where it becomes interesting, is because when you're talking about the commerciality of certain things, then you have to have an element of, if someone is 20% dickhead, then you might have to just go, oh, okay, I'm going to have to accept that, because that's going to allow the business to thrive, grow, and, you know, put food on the table. And I think, you know, it's, you just got to try and help people along the way. You know, like, what we find is that our attrition comes down to people either not being part of the community. And what do I mean by that? It's just not their vibe, and I'm completely cool, and there'll be other coaches and trainers that will be sufficient for them, or they just, CrossFit's not for them, you know. And it's as simple as that. Do I believe it's going to benefit them in the long run? Hell yeah. I mean, I could, you know, I've got a list of clients that I can pull out the pocket that have used CrossFit to better their lives and move on to something different. So, for example, I had a when she started, with me at 54 years of age, female client, never worked in the gym, did bits and pieces, and then she is now a runner. Okay, so she has never run, never done any distance, used CrossFit training and our programming that we do here at the gym to get to a level, and now she's like, look, you know what, I just want to go run for a while, I've never done it before and I'm really enjoying it. I'm like, cool, that's winning for us. You know, same thing would be like, you know, with someone who's at an elite level, you know, they like CrossFit, they like the training, they just like the element of, put, you know, suffering sometimes. You know, at some point they might say, I need to do a break. You know, if you look at someone like Marcus Philly, dude just does bodybuilding, like a functional bodybuilder, doesn't matter what you call it, there's something different. You like Alec Harwood from Bath, elite level at a CrossFitter, just wants to take some time out and away from it. And I just think the development of, or where affiliates or boutique gyms, whatever you want to call it, okay, it's moving towards new ground where there's a balance of people who want to compete, there's a people who just want to come in and get their hour of sweat in, there's people who just want to train within a functional environment but train on their own. And that's where I guess being like a politician and letting it all work and letting the horse come out becomes a bit interesting. But I guess as an affiliate owner, as a coach, you need to be able to be plastic in terms of how you or malleable, I should say, in terms of how you react with all those individuals. So let's say, for example, someone comes in, they like the vibe of the gym, but they don't want to follow the program. And I think it's a conversation to have, you know, why is that? What do you want to do? Well, it's just not for me. I think everyone is here cool, but I just don't want to do that an hour a day. I'm like, okay, you know, that's very rare that we get someone like that, but we might have someone after, say, 6 months to 2 years, just say, oh, I just want to do this for a bit. And I'm like, cool. Yeah, it's fine. But they're still part of the community, you know? So.
Yeah, for sure. Like you said, it's really understanding how that individual is going to react and like what they're looking for and figuring out how to manage their personality and figure out if that integrates with the larger group. Like you mentioned, look, I mean, on a team, right? It's if you want to stay on the team, if you want to stay on your rugby team, you can't be too much of a dick to everyone unless you are by far the best player, in which case someone may just say, you know what, like, this guy's going to win us a game, so we're going to keep him. But, you know, that can be a thing that people just don't understand, where it's like, hey, like, if you are a dickhead to people all the time and cause all these problems, they just don't want you on their team anymore. And that, you know, thinking of the gym as something like a team is probably a pretty good analogy there. Well, cool, guys. It's been about an hour and 20 minutes or so. And you got Dragon CrossFit going on. You got Ed Wads on Instagram. What else is the deal with your stuff?
I don't particularly post a lot on Instagram. I should post more. That's about it, really. If you want to follow anything and see some pictures of some chocolate or maybe some just one or two training tips now and then, you know, follow on Instagram, Edwards. I've just got my gym. I'm just doing the level ones. I bleed CrossFit. It's changed my life. And I guess the final parting thing I want to do is just say I use CrossFit Mythology to enable and empower people just to live a healthier lifestyle, and I use that mythology with my elite level athletes as well. Is that I just use that kind of scenario to get them to their results, and that just comes down through, you know, sort of trial and error, researching, reading up, doing courses, etc., and just trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work within the realms of functional fitness. You know, that would be it, really, because I think there's a lot of good information out there, but how that translates into the real world scenario just comes through experience.
There we go. Great. Leave it at that. Stop broadcast.